Hello, and welcome to the second of our Critical Sport Network podcasts. I've got two guests with me today who are going to talk about sport and gender. In our original proposal, we flagged up sport and gender as an area that's going to be really productive in terms of collaboration and cooperation on research, because we identified some really interesting synergies between the work that's going on with UK scholars of gender and sport and Taiwanese scholars of gender and sport. So I'm just going to ask the two participants to introduce themselves. So who have we got with us today?
Okay, hello everyone. I'm Ying Chang, and you can call me Mandy. I'm a professor at Tsinghua University of Technology in Taiwan. My research interests include, of course, gender in sports and media representation of sportswomen in Taiwan and nationalism.
Yeah. Okay, thank you. And who else have we got with us?
Hi, Dom. I'm Dr. Ali Bose. I'm a senior lecturer at Nottingham Trent University in sociology of sport. And very similar to Mandy, my research interests centre on women's sport, on gender in sport, and my PhD was centering on women's sport and national identity. So lots of overlaps.
Brilliant. Thanks both. So in terms of what we want to talk about today, I think there's three key areas. I think it's important that we get a sense of the state of women's sport in the two countries. Secondly, we're going to look at some of the research that's being done on sport and gender from a critical sociological or social science perspective. And thirdly, we're going to look at the similarities and differences between the two countries and try and bring those things together towards the end of the podcast. So let's start by looking at the state of women's sport in each country. Ali, I know you've done lots of research on this in recent times. Tell us a bit about what you think are the most significant trends in women's sport at the moment that tell us where women's sport is.
I think in the UK context, some of the most obvious trends in women's sport in recent years have been an increased level of professionalisation, increased significance of women's sport in the sport media. So there's lots of narrative around women's sport of kind of growth and success, I think would be fair to say, in the UK at a very like popular level. Some of the research I've done into this area has continually highlighted kind of issues with that, particularly the last couple of years around COVID and how women's sport was really seen as kind of secondary to men's sport in that regard. But I think that's almost prompted our increased awareness, I guess, or kind of a more obvious gender equality agenda, I guess, that has enabled women's sport to really grow the last year or so in the country at a very elite level. In terms of, I guess, more broadly thinking about women's sport, over recent years, continually seeing with kind of Sport England data increases in participation levels for women. Again, except during the pandemic, where women's sports participation levels dipped and haven't yet fully recovered really from the pre-pandemic levels. So there's been numerous research around the impact of the pandemic on women in terms of their own free time and ability to engage with sport and physical activity at a recreational level. So there's in terms of the state of women's sport, I guess, in the UK, that there's these kind of competing narratives, I guess, of more visibility at the elite end and then continuing challenges at a recreational level, I think.
Okay, thanks, Sally. That's great. Mandy, do you want to tell us a bit about the state of women's sport in Taiwan? And then maybe we'll probe some of those issues that Alice just raised.
Okay. First of all, I think the population of Taiwan is about 23 million. So we are not a very big country. We're very small. Most of our Taiwanese believe that we are not as enthusiastic about exercising or watching sport games as the rest of the world. We can find some statistics to support this belief. According to the household final consumption expenditure of the UK in 2019, British families spend about 10% of their income on recreation and culture, which includes sports recreation equipment or recreational and sporting services, etc. In contrast, Taiwanese families, we only spend 3.8% of our income on it. So according to a government published survey, the title of the survey is "The Expenditure on Exercise and Sport of Taiwanese in 2019. Taiwanese men were still the main consumer of all kinds of sport facilities or gyms, and they are main attendants of sport games. However, the number of females participating in sport and fitness has increased significantly in last 10 years. There was something very interesting here is that according to the same survey, it shows that Taiwanese women were more willing to buy exercise courses. They spent 1.8 times higher than men to hire instructors to coach them to exercise. Yeah, I think it's very interesting. On the other hand, I think when it comes to elite sports among the 36 Olympic medals won by Taiwanese in history, there were 22 of them were won by female athletes. So we might say that our female athletes outperformed their male compatriots. Yeah.
Okay. Really interesting. Ali, have you got a, I mean, I don't expect you to have these figures to hand, but in terms of a comparison, in Taiwan, we have most of the medal winners being female. Do you think that's the case in the UK?
That's a very good question, Dom, that I don't have specific numbers for, but I think one thing that's been kind of widely reported has been the increasing gender equality kind of angle, I guess, in terms of representation of athletes at the games. So whether that's across the whole cohort of athletes, we know that Tokyo 2020 was the most gender equal games. We've definitely seen that in terms of Team GB representation as well in numbers of athletes taking part. But I couldn't tell you the specific medal winners, unfortunately.
No. That was a tough call from me. I mean, my sense is that we would know about it if we had a greater proportion of female medal winners than we have male medal winners. But I guess that's an empirical question. Mandy, in terms of, Ali talks about professionalisation, is there an element of professional female sport in Taiwan, or is it all largely focused towards Olympic participation?
We don't have too many professional league in Taiwan, so it's quite that's the situation here. But if you want to talk about some elite female athletes here, I think in the past few decades, Taiwanese female athletes achieved great accomplishment in sport like taekwondo or golf. But for today, I think maybe two of the greatest elite sportswomen might be Guo Xingchun and Dai Ziying. Guo is a Aboriginal weightlifter, and Dai, the other one, Dai Ziying, she's a badminton player. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. And I think from my point of view, if I thought about trying to identify leading UK sports people, you'd talk about Lewis Hamilton in Formula One. You'd talk about the male footballers, male rugby players. So I think there's probably a difference there. Ali spoke about the increasing media exposure for female sport in the UK. Is that a trend that's happening in Taiwan at the moment?
Yeah, more and more people talk about this issue. But we have some friends in sport channels, yeah, but they have their concerns. So it's an unfinished job to do, yeah. But we can find more and more people here in Taiwan focus on this issue. And some audience will tell us that I want to have more women's sports game to watch. But yeah, you know, this is business TV channels, they have their concern. Yeah. But when it comes to media representation, I think we have a more gender inclusive media representations of elite women. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. And is that particularly around Olympic Games, or is that women's sport in general that has a really good representation in the media?
Yeah. Of course, yeah. Take Guo Xingchun as an example. She's a 5-time world champion, and she won a gold medal and broke 3 Olympic records in Summer Olympic Games in Tokyo last year. And her Dai Zing, her gender neutral gender expression and their muscular body were worshipped by the mass media of Taiwan, yeah, and their fans, of course.
Yeah, okay. Really interesting that you talk about the muscular bodies of female athletes being worshipped. Ali, did you want to reflect on that? The media representation of female athletes in the UK, is there a celebration of muscularity of female athletes?
Good question, actually. Really, agree. Really interesting point. I think there is an increasing amount of research done into media coverage of women's sport and various women's sports as well. So, primarily centering on Olympic sports, as Mandy mentioned in the Taiwan context, but also in terms of some of our elite level sport in the UK, such as football, rugby, etc. So, there has been. It's been reported that we've entered, this is research by Stacey Pope, entered kind of a new age of media coverage of women's sport. So it is looking more, I wouldn't even say gender equal, maybe more gender neutral in terms of reporting on sport as opposed to reporting on women's sport or the specific kind of strategies that we've come to be associated with the reporting of women's sports, such as the sexualization of athletes or the feminization of athletes. So I think with that comes some form of implicit celebration of women's bodies in a different way. The fact that we're not seeing journalists, reporters, media outlets focusing so heavily on women as kind of sexualized, feminized women. But I wouldn't necessarily say there's been a celebration of it. And I think increasing research, not only into kind of traditional media channels, but also like the emerging digital online media space, which has been highlighted as really important for women's sport. Some kind of recent research from the last few years has highlighted how female athletes feel really under pressure to continue to demonstrate their bodies in traditionally feminine ways or present their bodies in those kind of ways for sponsors and fans and stuff. So I think it's a complex area. I think there is maybe some examples where we're seeing kind of celebrations of strength, but I'd say more often than not, women athletes are still under pressure to kind of display these traditional notions of femininity.
Yeah, thanks, Ali. We have seamlessly moved into the second of our three topics, which is around the research that's currently being done on women's sport, and you've talked about Stacey Pope's work. What other researchers in the UK, or what other research about women's sport in the UK do you think is particularly prominent or important at the moment?
I think one thing to make a note of is that there is more and more research being done on women's sport. So it's the kind of scope of research is really diversified, I would say. I think a significant paper for me the last couple of years has been, or the last year or so, has been one led by Sri Bakker and worked on by Steph Cohen, who's at the University of Nottingham, on ACL injuries and the kind of gendered environment of that. So almost, I think, a kind of an agenda in research into women's sport has been around critiquing the male-dominated nature of the sport sciences and adding the kind of social angle to that and starting to make sense of this. For me, it's very much around the social construction of gender and how that has influenced how women's bodies perhaps move differently. So there's this kind of school of research into the sport sciences and kind of critical thinking around the research of the sport sciences, which I think has been really interesting. Obviously, the stuff around media coverage and social media, that's increasingly getting a much bigger space. I think the social media research has lent heavily on Kim Toffoletti's work and Holly Thorpe's work from Australia and New Zealand. But I've been really lucky to work with Niamh Kitching from Ireland on some kind of social media research in conjunction with a professional golfer, Megan McLaren. So that's been really insightful around some of those issues I talked about earlier, how elite athletes are kind of navigating that media space, I guess, or the diversification of the media. And then more recently, we've seen research, again, this is very much around elite level women athletes, but around maternity. So I've been lucky to work with Alex Colvin on kind of maternity issues for professional women footballers. UK Sport have just released guidance, kind of world leading guidance, actually, on supporting female athletes in having kind of competing through that maternity and post maternity period. So we're seeing more research into women's experiences of maternity injury, the increasing kind of documentation of the transition into professionalisation for elite level sport. So that's kind of, I would say, where my interests sit. Obviously, there's the extensive research at kind of a participation recreation level for women's experiences in sport. But in terms of where I've kind of really engaged with research at the level of elite sport, they're kind of some of the key areas, I think.
Thanks, Ali. Mandy, moving to you, what are some of the leading topics on research in women's sport in Taiwan?
As produced perspective, sociology of sport was neglected by sociologists and underestimated by athletes. Mm-hmm. In Taiwan, as a sport sociologist who concerned critical gender studies, we kind of face the similar situation here. In Taiwan's sport research field, most of my colleagues were former athletes. Some of them were enthusiastic sports fans, yeah, like Sean Chen, right? And besides, most of them were heterosexual male. I believe it was one of the main barriers for critical sociological sport research to develop in Taiwan's academic area, not to mention critical gender studies. It's kind of a multiple marginal research area here in Taiwan. Take the first two top sport academic journals, for example. They published over 2,400 articles in last 20 years. However, there were only 184 of them were gender related. And most of these articles were not sociological. In most of these researches, gender was just a demographic variable. Lastly, these few sociological sport and gender research mainly focus on the life experiences of elite sportswomen and college sport athletes. But as we know, women have heterogeneous experience of exercise and different identities. I always believe that we should pay more attention on that. That's why in my recent researches, I always try to capture different experience of women when doing sport or not, especially in their leisure hours or as a mom. Yeah, and I have just finished a two-year research project which was focused on the first generation of Taiwanese soccer mom. Yeah, and and football, and how football became one of the discipline in parenthood in Taiwan. Yeah, that's it.
Okay, and so that research, is that more clearly establishing the legitimacy of women in sport, do you think? I think some of the work that that Ali talked about in the UK has made the idea that women taking part in sport and being involved in sport is not exceptional anymore in the way that it used to be branded as something which was an anomaly. So is kind of women's participation in sport in Taiwan becoming seen as something which is very normal?
Sorry, I didn't catch that. Please, Dominic.
Has this research in Taiwan, mm-hmm. has this showed that women's sport is a very normal thing, a very legitimate thing for women to do? Or is it still seen as something which is peculiar for women to do?
I think most of people in Taiwan, they think it's normal and it's legitimate for women to participate in sports. However, I don't think most our colleagues in academic field believe it's an important issue to become or to be criticized or to do critical researches. I think that's they encourage most of our male colleagues in sport field. They encourage women participate in sports. They participate in sports promotion for women to participate in sport. But however, I don't think we have enough critical gender studies here. Yeah.
Yeah. Sure. And Ali, in the UK, picking up on that point of critical gender studies, you mentioned a number of authors, not all of them in the UK, do you feel that this is largely women researching women's sport, or are there notable men research? You know, I think that would be the point at which things appeared much more normal when men were equally researching women's sport and there wasn't that gender divide. So are there men in the UK who are researching in this area?
I mean, I'd hate to put a definite yes or no on that. typically, I think, as Mandy said, and yourself, Dom, this is a space that's been dominated by female academics and continues to do so. Now, that's not to say there aren't men writing about women in sport or collaborating with women working on women in sport, but I think this shift in research has been in part due to more women writing about women's sport typically. And it's an interesting trend that you see in terms of, if we go right back to the discussion of media coverage, that aligned with the increase of media coverage of women's sport is more female journalists. Now, I'm not saying that's a causal relationship by any means, but some work I was involved with that looked at the media coverage of women's football during the pandemic, during COVID, found that the majority of articles are written by female journalists. So I think the two go hand in hand at the minute. And I agree the shift will be when we start getting men working in this space as much as women. It's by no means a women-only space at all. And I can think of Alex Channon at Brighton, who's written about female athletes in mixed martial arts and combat sport. Mm. As an example of a man working in this space, and I'm sure there are others, but it is something that's dominated by female academics for sure.
I think, I mean, you mentioned Alex, and this touches nicely on a related subject around sexuality and sport. Tell me something, Ali, about gender and sexuality studies and sport in the UK. Is that a strong area?
I think historically it probably has been stronger. So I think back to maybe some of the research that Jane Cordwell was doing maybe 10 years ago on women's football and the discussions around gender and sexuality in women's sport we're very much centered on kind of sport as a safe space for multiple sexualities or fluid sexualities. I think Alex's work has centered very much on the performativity of gender and the kind of nuances of that, especially in mixed combat sports, which has had a really interesting angle. There's been, I can think of Leanne Norman at Leeds Beckett doing research into homophobia of women football coaches, or homophobic issues around women coaching in that space. And there's the forever held assumptions that women involved in those kind of masculine dominated sports of that we see in the UK, so football, rugby, have had this issue of kind of stigmatisation of as lesbianism. There's obviously the school of work of Eric Anderson and his scholars that have written extensively about inclusive masculinity and perhaps the decreasing homophobia we see in women's sport, decreasing homophobia we see in sport more broadly, but very much centred on men's sport and men's experiences, I think, in terms of that area of research. So a healthy research area for sure, but spanning men's sport and women's sport in very different ways, I think.
Thanks, Ali. And one of the reasons why I think this is important to discuss is because Mandy, and you'll tell us more about this. I was very intrigued to discover about Taiwan's very progressive policies around sexuality relative to other East Asian countries. Can you tell us more about the role of or where Taiwan sits in terms of the politics of sexuality compared to other countries which are near to Taiwan?
Okay. Taiwan is the first country in Asia that legalized same-sex marriage. And the Asia Pride Game will be held in Taiwan this April. Taiwan is maybe regarded as the most LGBTQ rights progressive society in Asia. However, we still don't have many openly gay elite athletes, actually almost zero. Yeah, as a result, even we can find plenty of researches into LGBT studies in many other academic fields in Taiwan, such as communication, sociology, or gender studies, but not too many from sports sociological perspective. Only Dr. Zheng Yuxian from NTU National Taiwan University, she has some very good work on that. I think it can be a very important and meaningful topic for, you know, Taiwan-UK collaborative researches. Yeah.
Yeah, no, that's great. I mean, I think it's, as Ali illustrated, it's an area where the scholarship in the UK is really strong. And I think there's a great potential to link up there with some of the really interesting political and policy developments that we're seeing in Taiwan. A third or another topic that I wanted to probe here was about gender and nationalism, because I think there might be some interesting things here. And I'm conscious that you've both worked in that area. And Mandy, do you want to tell us about the relationship between gender and nationalism in Taiwan?
As a consequence of Taiwan's belated modernity and multi-colonized history, nationalism underpins both the imagination and the practice of sport in Taiwan. It's impossible to capture the idea of sport in Taiwan without an understanding of nationalism and vice versa. Like I mentioned earlier, Taiwanese female athletes actually outperformed their male compatriots, and this has created empowered opportunities for female athletes. But however, the essence of nationalism is about who I am. So it has become a tricky, sensitive question today for some Taiwanese elite sportswomen, where they have great relationship in China. They might have to deal with this question. They might be drew criticism or be trolled online. Yeah, and it's also the most common thing for Taiwan-UK academic collaborative research.
Yeah, thanks. I mean, it's a perennial story, isn't it, that athletes are celebrated when they do well and they get lots of abuse when they don't do so well. And that's clearly multiplied in terms of when there's visual difference around gender or race or what have you. Ali, you've done some work on gender and nationalism in the UK. Tell us a bit about that.
So my PhD was on England women's national teams and the kind of complexities of national identity for women competing in sports where they can represent England, but also in some sports that can then transition into representing Great Britain as well. So that research really centered on kind of women's experiences of what it means to represent the nation, and they very much see themselves as embodiments of the nation, which is something that we've, I guess, academics in the School of Nationalism Studies have always flagged the nation as this kind of male dominated space across history, when it encompasses ideas of kind of militarism and warfare, and these have been typically male dominated spaces. And I think the emergence of, or the increasing significance of women's sport in England especially, has opened up a space where we have now got women as kind of visions of or embodiments of what the nation might look like. I think it contributes to, I guess, a diversification of maybe some of those national tropes or national ideas about what it means to be from a particular place. And I think the research into women and national identity is still very small, as a very small subfield of research into women in sport, which is a very small subfield of sport research, as we've discussed. But I think it, in terms of my research, opened up some kind of really interesting discussions about what does it mean to be a national representative, and how does that fit with kind of the vision of the nation, I guess. So an interesting angle, I think, for especially in the UK, where there's kind of competing politics of representing kind of a home nation or representing kind of the combined United Kingdom. An interesting space.
Yeah, I mean, for people who haven't listened to our first podcast, we talked extensively about different forms of nationalism in the UK and Taiwan. And we won't go into that here, I don't think, but there are distinct differences between the way national identity is conceived in these two countries. And I guess that also filters through into some of the gender and nationalism work. But it's an interesting and growing area of research. So just to bring this really, really fascinating and excellent discussion to a close, I'm conscious that we've talked about a few areas already where there's potential for research to be conducted in the two contexts and collaborative, comparative research to be done. I just wondered if there's any other areas that we haven't mentioned that you think might be good for scholars to move into and to research in future. Mandy, have you got any thoughts on that?
I believe that the diversity and richness of research in sociology of sport in the UK can really inspire young Taiwanese researchers to see the possibility of their future research. We still have so many uncharted, neglected, but important issues to discover. As I mentioned earlier, the queer studies, the gender studies, I think it can be a great topic to develop collaborative research. And it's actually what I experienced as a PhD student 10 years ago. I visited Loughborough, then Professor Ellen Banner, and of course, Ali. Your work and the way you treat academic work really inspired me a lot. On the other hand, for our British scholars, I think Taiwan can be a departing point to understand the East Asia. Let me quote from a Taiwanese sociologist, Chen Guangxin. He mentioned that Taiwan is a microcosm of the region's history. Taiwan was never a closed space, but a consequence of the political and economic struggles of the East Asian region. It was influenced by mainland China before the 20th century, colonized by the Japanese in the first half of the 20th century. This was the shared experience of the region. In this way, understanding the history of Taiwan is the way to clarify the interrelationship between East Asian countries, as unquote. As China has become the growing power in the world, Taiwan can be a very helpful gateway to the upcoming superpower. So collaborate with us. Hopefully you might be as inspired as I have been. Thank you.
Yeah, no, great, Mandy. Yeah, I think there's so much truth in what you've said there. Ali, are there any other areas that you think that are ripe for people to move into in their research?
I think if I speak probably more so to my areas of research expertise, so research around the kind of elite women's game, I think one thing that academics globally really writing about this kind of stuff are guilty of, myself included, is maybe speaking in big generalizations of we're seeing an increasing professionalization of women's sport, or we're seeing more positive media coverage of women's sport, or these kind of phrases, and very much only having a very close look at these countries where we are seeing this kind of growth or progression, I guess. So America, the UK, Australia, some areas of Western Europe. And I think the opportunity to collaborate with Taiwanese scholars and look at the Taiwan context, as Mandy said, opens up possibilities for thinking in much more nuanced ways about what the landscape of women's sport looks like, especially at that very top level, and moving away from some of these more heavily researched sports of, let's say, women's football as a primary, and thinking a little bit more fluidly, I think, about what does that space look like. So I think there's some really big opportunities for academics in the UK to kind of expand thinking. And Mandy said, you know, she was inspired by coming to the UK and seeing how the UK does research. I think there's the flip side of that is that there's a real scope for Taiwanese academics to inspire UK academics to just think outside of kind of white Western context, I think, and really expand what we know about women's sport in a more global sense.
I think between you've summarized this beautifully. There's that synthesis between theory and applying theories in different contexts, the comparison between different contexts, and the real opportunity, I think, for UK scholars to be conscious that UK and Western sport is not the centre of the world. It might be financially, but it's not the only sporting model that exists, and we're blinded because of our privilege in some senses, I think. Today's been a really fascinating discussion. Thank you, Ali Bose, Ying Chang, for giving us your time and telling us about sport and gender in the UK and Taiwan. Thanks very much. See you again.